Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Oh man, we might hear it in a little bit later in the hour. We might hear the intro liner of From Mondakistan to the Flathead. I was hoping it almost would have played right then and there, because that's exactly where we are taking you this morning. We're going to take you to Mondakistan, as I call it, the Montana-North Dakota border. Whenever our friend Tim in Savage calls into the show, we'll talk about him calling in from Mondakistan. He lives in Savage, Montana, which is, of course, home to Montana's Speaker of the House, Brandon Lear, joining us now from Savage, from Mondakistan. Mr. Speaker, great to catch up with you. Thanks for being with us here on this Thursday morning.
How are you doing this morning, Aaron?
Hey, doing great. How about you?
Oh, doing all right. I'm actually in Helena this morning, so I'm over here. I'm not in the eastern end of the state.
You're getting out of ranch work this morning, then, I take it.
Actually, I kind of went to work. I'm helping out Senator Galt. So I've been up there for the last 4 or 5 days helping him out and getting things ready for calving in winter.
Wow. Yeah, it's always a busy season. You know, we think about the Montana legislature. You meet every other year. It's a quick 3 to 4 month session. But really, I think a lot of Montanans, We don't even realize how much work is done during the interim by a lot of legislators here in Montana.
Yeah, absolutely. I get quite a few emails and calls from people that think we're in session year-round, and they don't realize that Montana's legislature only meets, for 90 working days, 4 months every 2 years, and that we all go back home and have our jobs and have a bunch of other stuff to do. And then in the flip side of that, we, are constantly working on interim committees and, holdover senators, we're working on legislation for the next session. And it is a year-round job, but we only, we're only up here for actually doing legislative work, passing bills and doing that in session for 90 days every 2 years.
30 seconds before the break, and then we'll talk more after that, but what's the most interesting thing being worked on during the interim session right now?
There's a lot of different things that are being worked on right now, from fish and game issues. We've got health insurance, we're working on a supply chain study for prescription drugs, property insurance, that's going through the interim committee I'm working on. And at the end of every session, we have what's called study bills, and these study bills get ranked by the legislature, by all 150 of us, and the top, percent of them get sent to the interim committee that it should go to with that purview over that said subject, and they, do an in-depth study on it, and they may or may not come out with some committee legislation and ideas for the legislators and senators that are in the committee.
This is when the most important groundwork is being laid and teeing up the next session, which is why it's so critical. All right, hold that thought. Back with Speaker Lear after this.
Hey, you want to get...
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, we are taking your phone calls here as we catch up with Montana's Speaker of the House, Brandon Lear, out of Savage, joining us from the state capitol here this morning. The number for you, 406-294-0970. Or, hey, you can even just message us a quick question or a comment on the Montana Talks app as well. Yeah, Mr. Speaker, I know there's a number of different things we could talk about. One of the things I'm really excited to hear more about is this new judicial performance evaluation committee that essentially was created during the last legislative session. When it comes to our courts, our Supreme Court and to a certain extent our district courts here in Montana, I feel like that whole system has just operated under this good old boy system with zero accountability, zero transparency. And whenever, frankly, there's been transparency, we've seen, especially with the liberal mob on the Montana Supreme Court, they have gone to great lengths to resist any transparency. So I'm interested in seeing how that committee is going to turn out.
Absolutely. No, and I think it's going to work out real well. My appointment on there, former Representative Doan, Alan Doan there out of Glendive, is really excited to get to work on that committee. I think you hit the nail on the head with the transparency piece of it and accountability and just allowing Montana citizens and just regular people to kind of pull back that veil that they've been hidden behind for so long to see what's going on. And you and I have had so many discussions at length about how we need to revamp our, Montana court system and how they're, in our opinions, especially that they're not judging from the bench, the way that Montana citizens would like to see, especially with a lot of these cases that have come down, whether it's the Held decision or, just so many different decisions that they've come down with that seem to be completely on the opposite end. And then also, coming from to legislate from the bench. So I hope this committee can dig in and really do some good work for the people of Montana and to kind of show them behind the scenes of what's really going on and the decisions that they're making, and hopefully people will be better educated when it comes time to vote for, the Montana Supreme Court justices and their district court judges in their area.
Well, especially when we have seen so much, not just out-of-state interference in our judicial elections, but frankly, we've seen, foreign interference, especially in our ballot initiative campaigns. And now they're deliberately using the ballot initiative process to protect their left-wing mob majority on the Montana Supreme Court. And they're trying to advance, constitutional ballot initiatives that would protect that and limit free speech rights. So it's all the more reason we need some oversight, transparency, and accountability within our judicial system, especially given the foreign and out-of-state interference in those elections.
That is 100% correct. They try to hide behind the veil of nonpartisanship, and we don't need to know what's going on with the funding of the judicial races or their personal views or anything like that. But the more you dig, the more you find out things like the foreign interference, not interference, but foreign funding of their elections and the ballot initiative process and everything like that. And it doesn't come out till after the fact, after these justices have been seated and are now on the bench. And then, we have to wait 6 years to do it again. And I mean, I'm guilty as charged too, but it seems like us as the voting electorate of Montana, we have very short memories when it comes to that, and we can't forget, and we need to keep working on getting good candidates and electing these good candidates to these positions all across the state. And we did that with Justice Swanson, Chief Justice Swanson, and I think that's something we need to continue to work on and just keep putting up good people. I mean, we got Judge Wilson out of the Flathead running again, and we need to get behind him. I think he'd be in a phenomenal justice compared to Justice Eddie. I know that Seekins, Representative Seekins Crow, called her activist Amy Eddie, and that's the name that needs to stick.
Yeah, she is. Amy Eddie, who is the far left candidate for the Montana Supreme Court. I mean, she donated to Hillary Clinton. She's donated to these extreme environmental groups. She definitely very clearly is the far left Democrat candidate in a supposedly nonpartisan race. By the way, if you go to westernmt.news, great write up by Roy McKenzie, The Nonpartisan Judge Lie. It's really a must read piece. piece on that front, talking about how important that race is. Let's see, Speaker of the House Brandon Lehr, I got a question here from one of our listeners on the Montana Talks app. This comes from Morgan in Helena. Is the state budget replacing the COVID CARES Act and ARPA Biden era funding with state taxpayer funding? That federal money infusion was for a limited time, very prevalent in the DPHHS budget. So, yeah, all that federal money that was for a limited time, is that baked into the long-term budget, or will that go away? Let's see. Speaker Lehr, hold that thought. We'll get your answer to that question here coming up after the break, because I see we're already pushing into our next break here. But, yeah, we'll get the speaker's take on that one, talk more about what's going on in these interim committees. Budget accountability in particular right there and more. So stand by. Back with Montana Talks, Speaker of the House Brandon Lehr out of Savage with us right now.
Here's the News Talk 970 and 103.3 FM KBUL, your home for Fox News, Hannity, and Montana Talks with Aaron Flint. It's morning in Montana. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Phone lines are open for you, 406-294-0970. If you want to jump in on the conversation here with Montana Speaker of the House, Brandon Lehr. Yeah, Mr. Speaker, your thoughts on that question from Morgan in Helena.
Yeah, you know, I know that when we got that money in 2021, the COVID Relief Act, that was the boondoggle that was passed by the feds, that huge amount of money. I know that our biggest concern was we didn't want to pass any permanent programs. So I don't know with 100% certainty saying that some of that money is not, but I know that when we passed the bill through the House in 2021, that that money was to be used for infrastructure, or, you know, a lot of that money went to schools to renovate for COVID. And I know that it had a long timeline on it. Some of it went, you know, into, I believe, into 2026, 2027, that it had to be spent by. But I do not believe, I think that would be OTO money that was given by the feds. And I do not believe that any state tax dollars are being spent to backfill any of that. And, you know, I believe there's some places that tried, but then when the money dried up, there was no more money left. And so they either had to get rid of the program or fire people like you and I were talking about offline.
Yeah, yeah. During the break, we were kind of discussing this because I recall talking with Governor Greg Gianforte, you know, maybe during or before a previous legislative session. And I know he was adamant, and I know you and President Regeer have also been adamant about this. Like, we need to use one-time funds for one-time purposes and not bake them into long-term budgets because that's what, like, for example, they did in Missoula. The schools in Missoula, they said, oh, we got all this COVID money. Let's bake it in. And you saw this in the blue states in particular. They took this one-time infusion of all this federal money, and they wanted to bake it into the long-term cake. And then once the one-term funds went away, they had to start cutting pieces of cake and throwing it in the trash because you didn't have the funding anymore. But then they tried to say, what Missoula said is, well, either give us a bunch more money in taxes or we're going to fire all these people. Well, they shouldn't have used one-time funds to bake into the long-term budget to begin with.
Well, and that's what we try to stay away from here in the legislature, especially in the appropriations process, is if we have surpluses or if we have grants or if we have Fed money, we do not want to set that up to where then that's on the backs of the taxpayers, you know, for the foreseeable future. So, no, it's definitely something you got to watch out for, and making sure that this little program that you want to start that, you know, may only cost $1 million, and up here it's, you know, that seems like it's peanuts, but then that program, once the money dries up for it, then either has to go away or put on the back of the taxpayers. And we don't want to put any more on the Montana taxpayer anyway.
Yeah, well said. You know, when we opened up the show and you were talking, just kind of giving an overview of everything that's being talked about or discussed here during the interim, I would just encourage our listeners out there across the state, stay engaged with your local lawmakers, especially while they're back home. You know,
absolutely. Yeah. And this interim process even allows more time for Montanans or anybody that wants to be involved in the process to get involved. you know, whether it's, you know, you want to get involved in professional licensing reform, figure out when the next Economic Affairs Interim Committee is and come in under public comment. There's way more time for us as legislators to sit down and to really do a deep dive into issues and try to come up with some sort of fix or you know, if there's a problem, to try to get the ball rolling. Because when the session actually starts, if a bill's just being drafted then, I mean, it's a more of an uphill battle than it is if we're able to present it in front of all the stakeholders in, you know, said industry. And there's probably more than just, you know, you out there that have a problem, and you can, you know, get together with everybody and we can have something that's hammered out and ready to go on day one. And boy, it puts you in a lot better position than being behind the eight ball trying to get something figured out, because 90 days is not that long.
Yeah, so much of this work is really getting the ball rolling ahead of the legislative session, and either you can be a part of getting that ball rolling or you'll get rolled over when that short legislative session comes up.
You're 100% correct on that one.
We mentioned this at the Montana Farm Bureau in Missoula earlier, last month, that like they're debating resolutions, they're taking policy positions at these meetings. So a lot of folks wonder, well, the legislative session comes up, how come Organization A or Organization B is supporting this or opposing that? Well, that's why you got to get involved at the organizational level as well to influence these things before the session's underway.
Yep. And another big issue that this session is obviously water policy over exempt wells and water usage and everything like that. And that's been a longstanding, I don't want to use the word fight, but it has been for the last, you know, 6 years or three sessions I've been involved up here. And that's an issue that it doesn't seem, you just got so many people dug in on all sides. And that's an issue that we have to figure out. Otherwise, our courts are going to figure it out for us. And we really need to, as a legislature, figure out what we're going to do, because, I mean, it doesn't matter if you're trying to develop for the people moving in here, you need water. It doesn't matter if you're the farmer or rancher that's irrigating or running water line to your cattle tanks, your water tanks out in the middle of nowhere, or if you're the guy that really likes fly fishing up in the Flathead or down in Bozeman, or, you know, fishing for paddle fish in my end of the state. Like, everything revolves around water, and that's an issue that we're seeing that is going to need to be resolved. And I know there are plenty of people way smarter than I am that are working on that issue. And I know that we need to figure it out. Otherwise, our liberal courts are going to figure it out for us.
That's right. Well, and my pet peeve, I raised this at Farm Bureau too, was why are we fighting about water? Because we don't store enough of it here in the first place. We've got enough water in Montana. We just send it downstream every year. So let's develop more water storage, so we don't have to be fighting over it so much. That's kind of my take, but hopefully they're looking at that angle as well. We got a caller. Speaking of housing, we got a John in Kalispell on the phone lines here. John, did you have a quick question or comment for the speaker?
Well, Mr. Speaker, I have a quick question for you in regards to the Department of Commerce just released four or five grants out for $39 million. And I would really love to see the state legislature actually do audits on what the actual cost is on the money's giving out and what they're actually providing. Because I just did a quick analysis for the city of Kalispell and what they have done there with the outpost at Kalispell, going through Community Action Partners. There is a law firm involved in it, is one of the partners, and then a developer out of Minnesota. However, the cost per square foot on the 24 units, as described in the articles, is $418.72 per square foot to build those 24 units. Additionally, you're looking at $8.3 million has been given to the developer. My question is, what did the developer put in for money to buy a 0.8-acre lot in Kalispell, when in fact per month they're going to be making about $25,000 in rent on that property?
All right. Thanks for the call. I know we've got a couple more minutes here with you, Mr. Speaker. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I guess housing is not an area that I dive into very much. I knew that there was some grants given out by the Chamber of Commerce, and I have not heard or been updated by any of that, but that's something that I'll have to look into. And I guess I'm not a realtor or developer, so I don't know what's a high cost and what's a low cost, especially up in Kalispell. So that's something we'll have to look into and hopefully get some answers on to see if everything's on the up and up.
All right. Let's see. I know we've only got a couple more minutes with you here, Mr. Speaker, but you mentioned fish and game issues and what's being looked at here in the interim. A couple Christmases ago, I think it was, we did a show in Malta where we, you know, we're talking with a bunch of hunters that raised concerns about too many out-of-state hunters. And then, boom, the next legislative session, I think the legislature actually, you know, worked to address that issue and lower the number of out-of-state tags. And if I'm not mistaken, I think when I got my hunting license this year, the cost went down for me, I think. But what are some of the fish and game issues that you're looking at here?
Well, I know that for me personally, it's making sure that our you know, federal ground, especially dealing with the APR, American Prairie Reserve, we're doing everything we can at the state level to make sure that they can't, well, I guess, try to make it a little bit harder to run their buffalo because they're taking these leases from when they buy a ranch, and then the feds are saying, well, you can run buffalo on them, and the buffalo, they don't ever take off of any of these leases. So we want to try to make sure that, you know, because as an average farmer or rancher, you can only run your cattle on there from, you know, let's say June to August. Well, you're not taking the buffalo off, and the feds are giving them these leases. So I want to make sure that in the state, any state land that they're running on, that they have to follow the same rules that a farmer or rancher does.
It's about protecting the environment, protecting the land. The ranchers do it, they should too.
Absolutely. And, you know, other issues is trying to get in on some of this FWP land or National Forest Service and being able to, you know, use a little bit more of the good neighbor authority to log and mitigate for fires. I know our fire crews and firefighters across the state, especially our wildland firefighters over these last couple of years that, you know, it has been hot and dry. We've managed to really be aggressive and keep our fires to a minimum. And so looking into issues like that and, you know, a few hunting issues that are popping up, you know, whether that's, you know, the big issue is do we want to have a more regulated mule deer season? And there's people that fall on both sides of that fence, and both of them have good arguments. And it's kind of seeing whether we want
to tackle it during the interim. Yeah.
Yep. Just kind of everybody's opinions on it and going from there.
Securing America.
Wednesday, several law enforcement agencies in Georgia announced the results of a cooperative effort late last month, which resulted in a major drug seizure. North Georgia U.S. Attorney Theodore Hertzberg.
Approximately 1,600 pounds of deadly Mexican cartel trafficked methamphetamine, which remains a significant scourge in our community.
The meth was in several trucks and hidden in shipments of blackberries. Paul Brown is the special agent in charge of the FBI's Atlanta office.
Although this was a significant disruption to drug trafficking here in Georgia, we're not satisfied with this alone.
Two people were arrested in the case, including an undocumented migrant. Chris Hosey is the director of the Georgia Bureau of Investigation.
This fight will continue, keeping our communities and states safe from this kind of evil that exists.
Kevin Uresky, Fox News.
Christmas. Put your phone on D&D, that means that you're not disturbed when you're driving. And when you're going from point A to B, I need you to stay safely, so always sing with me. So put your phone on D&D, that means that you're not disturbed when you're driving. And when you're going from point A to B, I need you to stay safely, so always remember this beat.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
This is where Montana talks ag.
with Lane Nordlund.
As Tyson Foods plans to close a Nebraska beef plant, sending shockwaves through the state, dubbed the Beef State, the company plans to lay off over 3,200 workers when the plant winds down in mid-January. The Lexington, Nebraska plant handles an estimated 5,000 head a day and is located near several large feedlots. David Jobman is chairman of the Dawson County Cattlemen's Association and said at first he thought it was a joke, but quickly learned it was no laughing matter.
Yeah, as a cattle producer here in Dawson County, I'm just in shock along with everybody else. I'm sure the decision was not made lightly, but yeah, that's going to have a huge impact that's going to ripple across the communities around here. Pretty good area that was bringing fattened cattle to Lexington for slaughter, and now you're going to have to find other markets, and added transportation costs are certainly going to be a factor in decision in that.
Nebraska's cattle on feed numbers remain solid, and local leaders in the community, many of whom raise cattle, would like to see the plant continue running under new ownership, but face a number of hurdles to do so. And more than 270 leaders from across the dairy industry gathered last week for the 2025 Dairy Sustainability Alliance fall meeting, highlighting how collaboration drives progress. The event highlighted the new 2023 through 24 U.S. Dairy Sustainability Report, tracking progress in well-being, environmental stewardship, and animal and community care. I'm Lane Nordlund.
Big topics. Big ideas. Big sky. Montana Talks.
All right. Thanks to our friend Lane Nordlund for that report. All right. Let's see. So earlier this week, I shared audio of our conversation with Montana's Attorney General Tim Fox. And we were talking about the ribbon cutting ceremony that took place this week for the brand new Montana Historical Society's Montana Heritage Center. In our state's capital, in fact, frankly, right across the street from our state's capital, I'm looking at a photograph of the building right now. It just looks like an incredible facility. So they cut the ribbon on this new $107 million Montana Heritage Center and home to the Montana Historical Society. Thanks to Governor Greg Gianforte's efforts, $57.3 million in private donations was raised for the construction of the center, including $25 million from the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation and $10.4 million from Winifred, Montana's own Norm Asbjornson. And both, as we told you on the show earlier this week, both Dennis Washington and Norm Asbjornson were on hand for the ribbon-cutting ceremony. I was hoping to maybe get Dennis Washington and or Norm Asbjornson on the show because, you know, it's so rare that you actually get a chance to hear from these, really, these industry titans in Montana, like Dennis Washington and Norm Asbjornson. But then I just saw the governor sent out a press release after the event, including full video, and looks like really some incredible remarks from both Dennis Washington and Norm Asbjornson. What an incredible story Norm Asbjornson has, by the way. You guys are familiar with everything he's done for, you know, his hometown of Winifred and everything he's done for MSU. And then, of course, everybody, you know, UM folks are so well aware of everything Dennis Washington has done for that campus in particular as well. But I think I may share some audio from the remarks from that event here in just a second. But first, let's get to a caller on the phone lines. We've got Matt in Columbia Falls. Matt, what's on your mind? Thanks for the call. I can hear myself. Are you there, or did we lose you, Matt? Okay, I'm not hearing Matt. Maybe he's not hearing me there. But anyway, give us a call back, 406-294-0970. Or maybe the call got transferred to us wrong there, Michael. I'm seeing you've still got a call on hold back there. So maybe the caller is still with you back there, if there's another way to send that one. All right, in the meantime, okay, here, let's roll right into it here. Here is Dennis Washington. You know, he's got, of course, a background. Oh, okay, now we got Matt coming through. All right, Matt, I think we got you on the phone lines now. Matt, are you there?
Yep, I can hear you.
Hey, perfect. Okay, well, what's on your mind? You wanted to talk about hunting after we were getting a brief recap on fish and game issues there.
For sure. Yeah, and I appreciate you taking my call. I'd spent way more time hunting this year than I have in the years past. It was a complete blessing to be able to do that, but I'm live in the Flathead, so I had early season in the Flathead, mid-season in eastern Montana over by Fort Peck where I grew up, and then late season back over here in the Flathead and down by Wisdom. And everywhere I went, I mean, I saw way more out-of-state hunters this year than I have in the years past. And I'll be honest, I didn't talk to a single one that was hunting to put meat in the freezer. They were all trying to put horns on the wall. And honestly, you know, not get too far into the weeds, but hunting with absurd equipment and things like that. And, you know, it just leaves me wondering, why are we giving our meat for our families in Montana that need it to guys who honestly don't care about the meat and all blow holes in deer you wouldn't believe, and just to get the horns? And my thought has always been, you know, reduce the amount of out-of-state tags by half and double the price of them, and it still leaves the opportunity for those guys that want to come out here and trophy hunt our herds, but give those other half of the tags that would have gone to out-of-staters to Montana families that'll use it for meat.
Well, especially right now, given the prices that we're still dealing with following the Bidenomics and the Biden inflation. Yeah, you'd probably laugh if you see me out there hunting, Matt, because I'm the guy like using like my mismatched old army gear, you know, with the desert camo for a jacket and maybe the BDU style for the pants. And like, you know, it's funny, like you see these, you know, now everybody running for office, like you see these politicians, they have to be like, I'm a hunter, look at me, and they got the fanciest everything. And I'm like, you know, like most of us just go out there with our hand-me-down whatevers, guns included.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes I mean, great for the people that have all the fancy stuff. It's awesome stuff. You know, I wish I could be, you know, coo-you'd out, sit-good out myself. But I'm gonna roll with what I got when I get out there. I just want some meat in the freezer. I'm with you. And just the experience. It's incredible. Yeah, I mean, when we talked with all those hunters in Malta a couple years ago, that was, you know, their big concern is that it's just – And people don't use guides like they used to. It used to be if people were coming in from out of state, they would use a local guide, a local outfitter that could kind of guide them along the path so that they're following the local rules of the road and kind of things like that too, right?
For sure.
All right. Well, Matt, thanks for calling in. Great to hear from you.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, yeah. As Speaker Lear and these lawmakers are doing their interim studies and things like that here, sounds like Matt is saying, hey, still a challenge when it comes to too many out-of-state hunters. So thanks for that call. All right, here we go. This is Dennis Washington, of course, one of the industry titans here in Montana. He founded the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation in 1988. Of course, he's got a background in mining, railroads, and shipbuilding. Here he is with his remarks at the ribbon cutting for the Montana Heritage Center in Helena.
My wife and I are very excited to be here today to view this wonderful facility and all you people showing up. I'd like to thank all the people that the governor has congratulated here and Molly. I'd like to give a special shout out to the governor because without his dedication and tenacity to get this project going and getting after people like myself, this project, I'm going to tell you, would never have got off the ground other than a bunch of steel hanging out here. So let's give him a big round of applause. Now, I want to tell you kind of a short story here about a man who had a dream. The dream came true. And it affected substantially the economy of Montana, which remains his footprint today and is still helping the state tremendously. His name was Marcus Daly. Now, Marcus Daly was a geologist, successful geologist, that he made a big mark in Comstock Lode in Nevada. He made a fortune for George Hearst and also a guy named Hagen, who had a big ranch out here in the valley, and he was a big banker out of San Francisco. Well, he heard, after the tail end of this project, he heard about a huge silver gold deposit in Montana. So he talked to Marcus and people involved, and he said, look, he said, I'm going to go to Montana. I'm going to get back to you people and tell you what I find. He went to Montana, and you got to remember, in those days, you got to travel by train, stagecoach. I mean, that was a badass trip. But he did it, and he went up, and he explored all over and researched everything. And what he discovered was not only gold and silver, but a huge copper dome. And he really looked this over, and he said, this is what I want to concentrate on. And so he called the guys back.
All right, and we'll hold that story right there and pick up where we left off coming up here right after this quick break on Montana Talks. This is Dennis Washington at the Montana Heritage Center ribbon cutting.
My pizza.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, I wish we had more time to play the full remarks of Norm Asbjornsen and Dennis Washington here, but I'm going to go back to Dennis Washington's remarks at the ribbon cutting for the Montana Heritage Center, because it's fascinating to hear him talk about not only Montana history, but also his own history in the business arena here in Montana. And so we're going to go back to his remarks where he was talking about the history of Marcus Daly, Butte, Anaconda, you name it.
Look at this big hill overlooking Butte and looking out in the valley toward Anaconda. He says, I want to build the biggest smelter in the world out of that site. I want to build a sawmill that will cut 10,000 cores of wood per day to feed that smelter. I'm going to build a large water system in Montana at Silver Lake to service the smelter. And I want to build a railroad from Butte to Salt Lake City. Now, even today, that's a momentous project. But after much persuasion from Mr. Hagen to Mr. It became clear that they were going to back the project, and they did. And they formed the Anaconda Mining Company. And the reason I tell you this story is because Marcus Daly's dream also allowed me to play an important part in the history of Montana, as far as railroads and mining. And I bought the former Anaconda as in 1985. And almost every article publicized at that time said I was going to go broke. And I almost did. But due to the hard work and the dedication of half a dozen guys, we were traveling all over the world trying to find a place to sell the concentrates. Wound up in Japan. We had to get power contracts. And it was just like we had to start the stripping of the mine that had been high graded before 6 months before we were going to open it. And but long story short, it became very successful. In 1987, I took over the southern route, and we called it MRL, of BNSF. And as you all, maybe most of you know, in January 2024, we returned that to BNSF on a very mutual basis. I'm no copper king at all. I mean, Marcus Daly and the history, if you can read a lot here, Marcus Daly, and you take, goes through the Rockefeller family, Amalgamated Copper, big Caterpillar. My wife taught elementary school, and we, on the way home from school, she would kids and adults through the generations ahead. They're going to share this and learn about the great state of Montana. But I want to thank you all very much. Have a good day.
All right, so there you go. Yeah, that was the full remarks there of Dennis Washington at the ribbon cutting for the Montana Heritage Center the other day. And really cool to also watch the remarks of Norm Asbjornsen, who was actually born in Lewistown back in December of 1935, grew up in Winifred, of course. And you know, if you haven't heard about their high school football field, of course, just fly over and you'll be like, "What is that?" Well, that's I guess you could say the house that Norm built, and he's built so much on the MSU campus as well. But yeah, he ended up sharing kind of his history and history of business as well. And I know anybody I've talked to has gotten a chance to be in the room with Norm Asbjornsen and hear him share his story and hear him talk about businesses. Just always finds it fascinating. Well, you get to basically be in the room when you watch the video of these remarks from the ribbon cutting at the Montana Heritage Center. Okay, let's see. What do we got coming up tomorrow? Oh, Friday's show. Yeah, this will be interesting here. Lana Batts. This one caught my eye. So Lana Batts, big name in the trucking industry. In fact, she's got an incredible story. She recently was recognized by the University of Montana, I think with like a Distinguished Alumni Award or something to that effect. We'll have all the details for you tomorrow. But yeah, long haul leader. A trucking industry exec earns an honorary doctorate from the University of Montana. When I saw that news, I thought, hey, we got to see if we can get her on the show. She was one of the very early, you know, one of the big first women leaders in the trucking industry. So we're going to get a chance to catch up with her on the show tomorrow. Let's see. Now we only got about a minute or so left here. Oh, other big news. Let me go to the Montana Talks website here. I told you we've got the Montana Heritage Center photos on our Montana Talks website. This was a story that we told you about earlier this year. In fact, we had callers calling into the radio show saying, hey, is ICE doing a raid in Belgrade this morning? That was a call we got into the radio show earlier this year. And I checked in with ICE, and they're like, yep, that was us. We were there. So you remember hearing about the ICE raids in Belgrade earlier this summer. Well, now a Belgrade, Montana woman has pleaded guilty in federal court to harboring illegal aliens. In fact, harboring nearly a dozen illegal aliens. Plus, we've got a new photograph that I hadn't seen yet. That was shared by HSI, Homeland Security Investigations, out of Denver, showing the woman who was arrested along with several others in handcuffs. Her name is Eustolia Casareal, who was arrested in Belgrade and has now pleaded guilty to harboring, I think, nearly a dozen illegal aliens. And boy, when you look at the photos, it looked like they were all staying in this one little house, bunk beds in the garage and all. Check out that story, the latest update with a lot of new details from the U.S. Attorney's Office at MontanaTalks.com.